abortion via telemedicine.
Why aren't international travelers vaccinated?
How do we assess cardiovascular risk in young people?
And does the age of your physician influence your outcome if you're hospitalized?
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. Posted on May 19th, 2017, I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins, president of the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso, and dean of the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine.
So, Rick, I just have to turn immediately to the British Medical Journal, a big study and one conducted in the United States, taking a look at physician age and patient outcome among those who are hospitalized.
So I have a question. Did you happen to pick this particular article with a finger pointed towards me or just because it was of general interest?
Well, I don't know. I think I could have more than one interest in this. And so it's multifactorial.
All right. Well, on to the study. It was entitled Physician Age and Outcomes in Elderly Patients in Hospital in the U.S. They looked at Medicare hospitalized patients between 2011 and 2014, and they were treated by hospitalists. You know, that's a fairly new subspecialty. In looking at over 750,000 admissions who were managed by just slightly under 19,000 hospitalists, what they discovered was that even after adjusting for the patient's condition and the hospital practice, the 30-day mortality rate was lower for the physicians under 40 years of age compared to those over 60 years of age. The 30-day mortality was 10.8% for physicians aged 40 years or younger. The mortality was 12.1% for patients taken care of by physicians over the age of 60. That's about an 11% difference in mortality.
And I think this is a really interesting observation, admittedly an observation, and I'd like you to speculate on what you think some of the causes might be.
All right, well, let me add one other piece of information that may help us. There really was no difference in mortality for the older physicians that took care of a high volume of patients. Like many other practices, whether they be hospitalized patients or patients undergoing a procedure, oftentimes volume contributes to the quality of the outcome. It does appear to be here as well. It could actually be an age effect. The younger physicians are closer to training, or they've seen more patients recently, or they're more likely to use evidence-based medicine, or they're more up to date on the newer treatments. That's one possibility. The second is it's a cohort effect. It has nothing to do with the medical knowledge or how we use it, but the practice in which we engage. For example, physicians like myself, and I'm 61 years of age, practiced independently. We didn't do a lot of multi-specialty practices. There wasn't a lot of interprofessional education. It may be that it has nothing to do with age of the physician. It may have to do with the fact that the younger doctors are trained in a different setting and take advantage of all the quality advantages that the new healthcare system provides. At this point, the study doesn't shed any light on this.
It certainly, though, seems to me like something that ought to be followed up.
Absolutely. I think you're right. You want to get to the bottom of it. If, in fact, it has to do with the age, that is, the older physicians not being up to date or not using evidence-based medicine, well, we need to make sure that we push the information out. If it's, they need to practice differently, then we need to change that. Or if there needs to be a certain minimum volume, by the way, maybe that's the answer. Rather than dismiss it, us older physicians ought to embrace and say, okay, what can we do to make sure that our patients have the best outcome?
That's a great message. Let's stay in the British Medical Journal and take a look at a really interesting study in Ireland where there are a lot of restrictions on abortion. What they did was take a look at if we provide women with medicines so that they can take care of this and we interact with them online, what do those outcomes look like? Are we concerned about possible complications?
About a quarter of the world's population lives in countries with highly restrictive abortion laws. Obviously, that's meant to preserve the life of the child. But in many instances, this doesn't dissuade mothers from pursuing it. They just do it in less safe ways. So that globally, there are about 43,000 women who die annually as a result of lack of access to safe, legal abortion. Well, as you mentioned, in Ireland and Northern Ireland, they have some of the more restrictive abortion practices. What has been available to women there is online access to medications to allow them to have abortion. Well, what nobody has done is looked at, gosh, is that safe or not? That was the focus of this particular study. They looked at 1,000 women who underwent self-sourced medical abortion through a website called Women on Web. It's an online telemedicine service. And they looked at women, 1,000 women, who used the service between 2010 and 2012. And here's what they discovered. There were medications over that two-year period sent to 1,636 women. Follow-up information was obtained in about three-fourths of these women. About 1,000 confirmed use of the medication, and they had follow-up in these individuals. Most of them were pregnant for less than 10 weeks. Overall, the medication was effective in about 95% without any need for any surgical intervention. About 1% reported needing a blood transfusion. About 2.5% reported needing antibiotics, either IV or oral, for infection. And about 9% had to seek medical advice because of some ongoing issue, usually related to ongoing bleeding or an infection or continued pain. So I think this study gives us some framework regarding this.
Well, we know from data here domestically that the large majority of abortions are switching over into this medical rather than surgical approach. And so I think this is validating in that it demonstrates that for the vast majority of women, this is a safe practice.
And you or I are not either advocating for or against abortion, but what's clear is that many women utilize these services, and when not available in a safe way, they use unsafe methods. And again, over 40,000 women die annually. So I think this provides a framework saying that properly administered using telemedicine and in women in early pregnancy, this can be a safe practice.
Okay. From here, let's turn to Annals of Internal Medicine. When people travel, they should often, if they're going internationally, make sure they're up to date on their vaccinations. But gosh, what happens?
This particular study focused on measles vaccination. Unfortunately, if you or I ask many younger individuals born after 1957, since vaccination has become available, and said, what do you know about measles and how serious is it? Many individuals would kind of yawn and say, well, gosh, it's not that serious because they've really not seen it. But I can tell you that before vaccination was available, in the United States alone, there are about 500,000 cases reported each year. That resulted in about 50,000 hospitalizations, 500 deaths, and 1,000 cases of permanent brain damage. In 2014 and 2015, we've had two reports of outbreaks in the United States, both of which have been from individuals that traveled from the United States overseas and returned back to the United States. So the recommendation is, if you're going to travel overseas and you can't prove that you've had vaccination or that you're within the right age group, you should have it. These authors looked at 24 different global health clinics. In looking at over 40,000 adult travelers, 16%, about 6,600, were eligible to receive the vaccine, and it was recommended to them. Unfortunately, less than half did. And they queried a little bit further, well, why didn't you receive it? Three-fourths of the time, the individual refused, not because they were worried about the vaccine, but because they thought that measles wasn't very serious. A fourth of the time, the physician didn't recommend it. So this tells us that we've got a lot of work to do.
And I would remind you that we've talked about before waning immunity. So I'm wondering if an effective strategy with regard to this is just saying to adults, hey, guess what? You need a booster.
That's one strategy. But you're right. There is some concern that you should have booster for MMR.
Something I think we all need to pay attention to. Finally, let's turn to this risk of cardiovascular disease among the young. That's also in Annals of Internal Medicine.
Since cardiovascular disease in its early forms is usually asymptomatic, we try to identify individuals that are considered to be at high risk either over the next 10 years, or maybe there's a 30% lifetime risk of developing cardiovascular disease. They were considered to be high risk, and we want to do preventive things in them. We want to make sure we change their diet and have them exercise and lower their cholesterol with a statin. Well, when do you start screening individuals? In individuals under the age of 50, how many of them are considered to be at high risk? So they use the NHANES data, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey data, from 1999 to 2012. And they estimated the 10-year cardiovascular risk in these individuals under the age of 50. And looking at almost 10,000 of these, approximately half of them are considered to be at very low risk. These are individuals that don't have high blood pressure and they don't smoke. And by the way, in these individuals, less than 2% of them would have an elevated LDL cholesterol, which would warrant treatment. So on the basis of that, these authors say, listen, if you're not smoking and you don't have high blood pressure, then your screening doesn't really need to start till the age of 40 if you're a man or age 50 if you're a woman.
How about, let me just throw one more little bit of a monkey wrench into this. What about if you have a substantial family history of early cardiovascular disease?
That was interesting because you think that that would tie to the cholesterol. Could we use that as a surrogate? Instead of drawing a cholesterol test on everybody, could you use a family history as a surrogate? And the answer was no, you couldn't. So in the absence of smoking, in the absence of high blood pressure, most individuals don't need to be screened before the age of 40.
Okay, we'll go with that, at least for now. It's a moving target. I'm going to be writing about this week on the blog, The Physician Age and Outcomes. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
I'm Rick Lang. Y'all live well.